Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio. Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Thursday, February the 22nd, 2018. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And Michelle and I both have been talking with Blog Talk, and they're kind of skirting around the issue and saying that a lot of the internet browsers are blocking flash plugins and things like that as the reason why you're not getting into your chat room. So I'm not sure that I buy into that, but I am chatting with them at the moment, and so hopefully we will at least get them to pay attention to us this time. So if you're having trouble with getting in the chat room, please send me a text or something. Let me know right now. There is nobody in there but me, so I'm assuming that means that people are still having issues getting in. And with that being said, welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everybody. Jeannie, you might check and see if your phone is on use the internet signal for telephone calls. Your voice is just cutting out and in slightly, and I hope mine is okay. If it's not, let me know. Otherwise, delighted that everyone's here to share this conversation and with this review that's happening. It's pretty much being consumed by Course in Miracles ideas, which, of course, are perfectly consistent with what we're doing from the first century Aramaic in looking into this whole process of forgiveness. So we're up to lesson 53, I believe. And before we actually get into that lesson, I just want to talk a little bit about confusion. Because confusion is a natural part of healing a mind. And so just to understand what confusion is, and then these lessons can tend to have one moving back and forth and back and forth in a way that produces even more confusion. So, to explain confusion from an energetic point of view, you know, imagine that I have a whiteboard and I shine a red light and a blue light and a green light each individually on the board. Now, we know scientifically there's no such thing as red, blue, or green. That's why we say some people are colorblind. The color that we see is a product of perception. It's a product of the mind. Some people's perception interpret colors differently than others. So there's some colors they don't see, like most do, or what the world would call properly. But each one is a separate frequency, red, blue, and green. And if I were to shine all three lights, the red, the blue, and the green, on one spot on the whiteboard, I would not have clarity of red, blue, or green. I would have literally a mix of those energies. And we could say that that muddy red, blue, green color that I see on the board is a confused interpretation of those three frequencies. When they add together, when they cancel each other out, we get some kind of a muddy mixed result of red, blue, and green. Well, my offering is that's precisely what happens with the mind. Confusion is nothing more than the addition and the canceling of frequencies with each other. So if I bring a thought in that goes opposite to the thought that I'm holding, then the two as energetic patterns create the result called confusion. And so where there are conflicting thoughts, there tends to be confusion. And one of the ideas of the course is to uproot all of your conflicting thoughts and bring them to truth, dissolve what doesn't belong, and end up with clarity. Clarity means the reflection of a single frequency that is coherent and based in truth. So a natural process, or natural result, pardon me, of the healing process is this thing called confusion. Conflicting thoughts create patterns that, in the same way red, blue, and green add and cancel each other as frequencies, those conflicting thoughts do the same. And I preface that, and then I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from the course. Actually, it's from a new lesson. We actually just finally got the video. I don't know what it's going to take in terms of time to get it ready for production on CD, but we have a new video. Another one of my favorite lessons is a lesson, "The Name of God is My Inheritance." And you perhaps have heard me speak before about there are a couple of paragraphs that in all of my work with the Course over the years have been the most powerful, in that they put me into a state of process. When I first started working with the Course in the early days, each time I would open the page to these two paragraphs, it would put my mind into mass confusion and mass process. I didn't know at that time what was happening. I understand it now. But the processing that has to occur to clean up the mind is something that just has to occur. The conflicting energies have to be moved through. And for me, I haven't ever heard anybody else report this, but for me, these couple of paragraphs, just each time, and I actually don't remember precisely, it was, golly, 30 years ago or more, that when I came across these two paragraphs, when I would read them, I would go into this instant altered state of process. And, you know, that went on for, as I said, I don't exactly remember. It might have been days or weeks or perhaps even months. It was just over an extended period of time. But these really do address, in a sense, to me, this idea of the confusion that necessarily ensues in the healing process and why it's so necessary to stay with the material until all confusion is cleaned up. So this is from the lesson, "The Name of God is My Inheritance." And the first paragraph says, "It would indeed be strange if you were asked to go beyond all symbols in the world, forgetting them forever, yet we're asked to take a teaching function." Thank you, sweetie. Seems the way I was getting muffled there. So if you remember this lesson, it starts out and says, you live by symbols. Now, remember that when your mind produces, you know, we've used the metaphor of a man standing on the tarmac from the jungles looking at an airplane propeller and seeing a shiny silver disc. So he sees something that is not there, but to him, the shiny silver disc in his mind is the airplane propeller. To us, we know that he's not looking at the airplane propeller, but he's looking at his brain's symbol of an airplane propeller. So the Course basically is saying we live by symbols, and then if he names that propeller or disc, then his word is a symbol of the symbol, which this lesson makes point of in the Course, that you live by symbols, and then you have symbols of symbols, which are words. So in essence, this start tone and saying, it's going to be strange if you're asked to go beyond the words and the images of the world, forgetting them forever, yet we're asked to take a teaching function. You have need to use the symbols of the world a while, but be you not deceived by them as well. They do not stand for anything at all. And in your practicing this thought that will release you from them. They become but means by which you can communicate in ways the world can understand, but which you recognize is not the unity where true communication can be found. So we're going to use words that represent objects, and we know that in truth those objects don't exist as we perceive them. And as millions of people perceive those objects and have names for those objects, we're going to use those names. We're going to talk about those objects, but I want to make sure that everybody's clear that we're not saying those objects exist. We're just using those words because that's the way the world has set up what's called communication, which, of course, isn't really communication at all. So then this particular couple of paragraphs explains why that happens and what you're doing. So thus, what you need are intervals each day. So you're going to use the symbols of the world of darkness, and what the Course is saying is, you got to take some time out from that. And that's basically what the lessons are for cleaning up the mind of its insanity. Remember that the word forgiveness is about removing content that doesn't belong, removing content that creates confusion, removing content that tells lies. So that's what you need, are intervals each day in which the learning of the world becomes a transition phase, transitory phase, a prison house from which you go out into the sunlight and forget the darkness. So, in essence, what the Course is saying is, you're going to spend some time with your mind in total collapse. And in total collapse, you will come to a realization of who you are apart from and beyond the mind. And that a necessary step in the practice is doing that, of just spending time without your mind experiencing who you are. Now, the world says, no, don't do that. Stay here and talk to me. I want to talk. I want to watch. I want to do everything the world is about, and this is what stops people. We actually went to dinner with a couple of folks a couple of days ago before we left Atlantic Beach, and they suggested a particular restaurant. And in the restaurant, I think Jeannie counted, it was either 7 or 11 television sets, music playing in the background, and dozens of conversations going on, made for unconsciousness, made to make sure that no one has the time to take a moment to be outside of that noise. So what the Course is saying here is, what you need are intervals each day in which the learning of the world becomes a transitory phase, a prison house from which you go into the sunlight and forget the darkness. Here you understand the word, the name which the Creator has given you, the one identity which all things share, the one acknowledgement of what is true. Now let's plug in Einstein here, who says, speaking about this very topic, he says, if you think you are separate or separated from the rest of humanity, you're living in an optical delusion. Your brain presents to you a picture where you're over here and I'm over there, and therefore we must be separate. Einstein calls that an optical delusion. And the Course affirms that. And then what the Course says is, and now you step back to darkness, not because you think it's real. So you go back into this world ruled by darkness, that is, that uses a billion meaningless words that say nothing about the actuality or the truth of who you are, but has people mesmerized in the lies of generations of hostility or fear. So the Course here is saying, and then you step back to darkness, not because you think it's real, but only to proclaim its unreality in terms which still have meaning in the world that darkness rules. So, and I'll tie in another Einsteinian thought here. You know, when you realize, you know, we've talked about the Harvard research that tell us that 10,000 brain cells are firing and the max amount of data that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. And in the same time frame, it's been estimated there are 20 trillion bits of information potentially available. So we have an actuality that perhaps is a 20 trillion bit world. We have the capacity for 10,000 brain cells to fire. We have a capacity to be consciously aware of 9 bits of data. You know, the world of psychology is pretty well verified for us that maybe 90 to 95% of our thoughts are unconscious. They're hidden from us. We don't know they're there. We don't have any conscious interaction with them. So here's Einstein, who obviously has had an experience beyond the 9-bit mind. And Einstein is this genius scientist, perhaps one of the greatest geniuses of all time. And Einstein says about his own work, about the whole scientific field at that time, Einstein says, all of our science, when compared with actuality, is primitive and childlike. In other words, if you're looking in at a 9-bit mind with 10,000 brain cells firing, and you're trying to explain a 20 trillion bit world, you're pretty much handicapped. If you go and look up that Einstein quote, by the way, he doesn't use the word actuality. He uses the word reality. And we've substituted a refinement here that speaks about, you know, if we've got our friend from the jungle standing looking at the shiny silver disc, or he thinks he's looking at the shiny silver disc, but he's actually looking at an airplane propeller. Our friend from the jungle is looking at perception, a shiny silver disc, a symbol of 4 hours spinning around a pivot point. And he blocks the actuality of the experience of the propeller by the reality of seeing a shiny silver disc. And he names the shiny silver disc a shiny silver disc. So the silver disc in his mind is a symbol of 4 hours spinning around a pivot point. The words shiny silver disc is a symbol for the symbol, twice removed from the truth of an airplane propeller. And so Einstein, what I hear Einstein doing is explaining to us the difficulty of thinking we're such scientific geniuses, and the truth is, in a 20 trillion bit world, we're dunces. Like we don't even have a clue what's possible. And then the Course goes on to say in this lesson, use all the little names and symbols which delineate the world of darkness, but accept them not as your reality. Now, we have made a little shift in actually both Einstein's words and the Course's words to add a refinement, and this creates more confusion, which is why I'm, or this can elicit more confusion, which is why I'm clarifying the whole idea of confusion. So when we talk about the gentleman standing on the tarmac, looking at the silver disc in his brain, thinking it's the airplane propeller is the actuality. The shiny silver disc is the reality. If you look up Einstein quotes, he says, all of our science when compared to reality is primitive and childlike. But he's using the word reality there as we're using the word actuality to represent what's actually there. And the Course does the same thing. We've clarified, you know, over the last couple of days, this idea that the actuality is what the Creator actually created. The reality are the pictures the mind uses to substitute for that. So hopefully that's getting clearer and clearer as the lessons unfold. So now our review lessons, and it's kind of interesting because we've got a weekend coming up, and each weekend has 5 review lessons. So that means that tomorrow and Sunday, or pardon me, Saturday and Sunday, there are going to be 10 reviews. So we're going to kind of see if we can move through those in a way that gets us through it fairly rapidly. So Lesson 53 has a review of Lessons 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15. The first one, 11, my meaningless thoughts are showing me a meaningless world. Since the thoughts of which I'm aware do not mean anything, the world that pictures them can have no meaning. So if we applied this to the man who's looking at the shiny silver disc, we would say, sir, excuse me, your shiny silver disc doesn't mean anything. Relative to the actuality and the fact that that's a pivot point with four arms spinning around it called an airplane propeller, your thoughts about this shiny silver disc mean nothing, and the picture in your mind of the shiny silver disc has no meaning. It's totally, completely meaningless and useless to talk about. So this lesson goes on to say, what is producing this world is insane. In other words, if our minds are not connected to the actuality and the presence of the love in which we live, move, and have our being, then our perception is going to be based in insanity. And my definition of insanity is a mind that's functioning without the presence of love and without the activity of truth. So what is producing this world is insane, and so is what it produces. The shiny silver disc is an insane idea. You know, the guy who believes that the shiny silver disc is what's actually out there might decide to put his fingers on it to see what the friction feels like. He's going to have a really serious problem by engaging in his reality and pretending it's the actuality of the airplane propeller. In the same way, if you were to look at what we call a human being, you would see this whirring mass. If you could see what was the actuality of the human, you'd see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light. You would not see a body, but your perceptual apparatus, just like the airplane propeller, can't keep up with the rate of spin of the atomic structure, so it makes up a world of a body. And that whole world of bodies, if you've acted as though you are and the people around you are bodies, then you've done some insane things, such as the person who thinks the airplane propeller is a shiny silver disc. You put your fingers on it, you get some serious consequences happening. So reality. Now, again, we're going to substitute. This lesson says the word reality, but in the context of our conversation, actuality is not insane. And I have real thoughts as well as the disconnected ones, the insane ones. I can therefore see a real world if I look into my real thoughts as my guide for seeing. And my real thoughts come from my link to what the ancients called the mind of Christ, the mind of love in me. When I think thoughts without relationship to love, in other words, when I'm in hostility or fear, I'm thinking insane thoughts, and I literally generate a reality that is an insane world, and I take my reality of pain and trauma, which is totally, completely meaningless except to me, and I lay it over top of the actuality of the people I am in relationship with. And by so doing, I lose my relationship with these awesome beings called love. When my hostility or fear rears its ugly head, I lose my connection to the actuality, and I live in a world that is insane. So, meaningless thoughts disconnected from love, show me a meaningless world. That's the bottom line of that lesson. And then the review of 12, I am upset because I see a meaningless world. Insane thoughts are upsetting. So if I have insane thoughts moving in me, by the nature of that movement, that is a disturbance. It's not the truth. It's not based in truth. And those thoughts produce a world in which there is no order anywhere. In other words, if I try to pretend that the thoughts in me that resonate, that produce the shiny silver disc, are true, then the shiny silver disc must be true. and I try to superimpose that on the airplane propeller, and it doesn't work. I have thoughts that produce a world of bodies, and I try to superimpose bodies on a world where there are no bodies, and I end up with some crazy conclusions. Only chaos rules a world that represents chaotic thinking, and chaos has no laws. I cannot live in peace in such a world. In other words, I'm going to have to practice collapsing that world. And this is the forgiveness process. If I want to make it a daily habit, unless I'm addicted to the world of chaos, the world of hostility or fear, or whenever something comes along, you know, I want to be right, I want to win, I'll make up a whole story out of these insane thoughts that prove that I'm right. And it doesn't matter whether the thoughts are even relative to what's happening in the actuality. If I come from a world where my power person ruled me by controlling me with insane thought, then when conflict arises, I will try to rule others with insane thoughts, insane, irrelevant stories. And that's exactly what happens. And so you can't be in that world and in peace. You can collapse that world and be in peace. But as long as that's moving in you, that insane world creates feelings, and those feelings become the cover for peace. They obliterate the awareness of peace. You will know that you're disconnecting from the insane world if you can be in that chaos. You're in disturbance and upset, but you can just take a breath, close your eyes, go inside, and tap into the undercurrent of peace that exists underneath all of that. You'll know you're making progress if you can do that. Perhaps not finished yet, but making progress. So this lesson, Review 12, goes on and says, I'm grateful that this world is not real. That is, the world of false perception. Our lesson last night in the course was, what is the world? And that lesson starts out, sums up the whole thing. The world is false perception. When I make up a world of shiny silver discs and I try to superimpose it on a world of airplane propellers, I'm living in a world of false perception. When I make up a world of bodies and I try to superimpose them on these beings made of light and love, if I could see who a human being really was, I'd see this whirring mass of electrons, protons, neutrons, and light instead of the meaningless world that I project on them from my meaningless thoughts. That is, my thoughts that are disconnected from love. And basically at this point, I mean, just take a look around, and virtually the whole world is working on meaningless thoughts. You know, we look at the political arena. We look at what's happening in schools today. You know, on and on. You know, we look and hear these kids who've just been subject to a shoot-up at their schools, and somebody's calling them crisis actors and telling us that it's all a fraud and it's all staged. These are minds working with meaningless thoughts that simply generate confusion and insanity. You got to take an intermission from that at least sometime to let yourself settle into the truth of who you are as love, and to deliver that action, that activity of love, to the world through your instrument. So this lesson says, I'm grateful that this world is not real and that I need not see it at all unless I choose to value it. And so if you still value the conflict, you know, you're having a conversation that's based in, well, let's just look at the truth of what's happening. But you have to win, so you value conflict, and you go back to one of the old insane thoughts based in hostility or fear and insist that you must be right, and therefore someone else must be wrong. Totally false precept. So then the lesson goes ahead and says, and I do not choose to value what is totally insane and has no meaning. Review of Lesson 13, a meaningless world engenders fear. The totally insane engenders fear because it is completely undependable and offers no grounds for trust. Nothing in madness is dependable. So nothing you can think about the shiny silver disc is going to be dependable about the airplane propeller. Nothing you think about the world of bodies is going to be dependable about the world of human beings that underlie the pictures we call bodies in our minds. It holds out no safety and no hope. But such a world is not real. I have given it the illusion of reality, and I have suffered from my belief in it. Remember that the word illusion in Aramaic means measured. If I put a frequency into my mind, an energy, then that energy will create a world of pictures. And those pictures will be my illusion. They will be a result of what I've sown, the thoughts I have sown in my mind. When I uproot them and throw them away, those illusions collapse. So I live in a world where I've made hatred real. I've bought the generational pattern of hatred is real. I've watched the television. I've listened to the politicians and spew their hatred. And I come to the point where I go, oh, hatred's real. Somebody deserves hatred. And then I go in and I do enough work to collapse hatred, collapse hatred, collapse hatred. And I realize that the whole hatred game is just something false made up by men. It's all based in shiny silver disc thinking. And then I collapse that. I can begin to embrace those who yesterday I might think deserved hatred. And I embrace them in the active presence of love. Now, it doesn't mean if the insanity is going on, if they're still playing in the world of darkness, that I can't confront the world of darkness, I can't speak up about it, I can't hold it accountable, I can't educate. It means none of that. It's just that I can bring a mind of connectedness and healing and love while I acknowledge what's going on. So now I choose to withdraw this belief and place my trust in actuality. In choosing this, I will escape all the effects of the world of fear because I'm acknowledging that it does not exist. So in another place, the Course speaks about what is fear but love's absence. It is an absence that seems to have some power, but when I bring light and love to it, its power disperses and disappears because it was false. Fear is not a presence, it is an absence. You know, nobody has ever invented a flash dark. You turn the button on the flash dark and all the light goes out. Darkness is an absence. The presence of light dispels the appearance of darkness. It fills the space where it seemed like there was this thing called darkness, but there is no thing called darkness. Darkness is no thing. It's an absence. And so it is with hatred and fear. It is an absence. So when I choose to have a mind that can bring the presence of love and bring the presence of love and bring the presence of love and bring the presence of love, I collapse the hostility and fear in my own mind. And I begin to be able to bring a light to everything and everyone that I see. And as I do, and I function as that light, others who perhaps are steeped deeply in the world of darkness and fear have an opportunity to turn toward me and go, oh, God, there's an alternative. I'm ready for that, man. I'm heading for the light. Now, when one first starts to do that, it can be pretty easy to get stuck back into, to block the presence of the light, to block the presence of love and get stuck back into the absence and believe in the world of darkness. But given time, if people hang around the work long enough and often enough, they literally dissolve the capacity to generate rage, hatred, criticism, condemnation, gossip, slander, vengeance. And to bring love to the party changes the whole game. So I place my trust in actuality. In choosing this, I will escape the effects of the world of fear because I'm acknowledging it doesn't exist. It's an absence. And then lesson 14, the Creator did not create a meaningless world. How can a meaningless world exist if God did not create it? Well, it doesn't, except as the appearance of, since we each in our minds have this digital to analog converter, if we entertain thoughts that aren't true, we make up a picture world of what isn't true. When we get other people to believe the pictures or the thoughts we think, then they generate the picture world too, and they think it's true. You know, you lay on the beach and you look at the clown's face in the cloud, and you say to the person beside you, look at the clown's face in the cloud. They look out and say, there's no clown's face up there. And do you remember what you did? Now, of course, there is no clown's face up there. The clown's face you're seeing is a result of water droplets that came together in a way that your mind was able to generate a picture of a clown's face between your ears, your reality. So remember what you did. You started to point out to them. You see that, you know, there are three big clouds up there. See that middle one and how if you look at the top of it, it's kind of fuzzy like a clown's, like clown's hair. And then you see down lower, you see right about in the center, there's that big round dark spot. Well, that's kind of like the clown's nose. And then there are two spots that are a little lighter just above and on each side of the nose. And there, and somebody else goes, oh, yes, I see the clown's face. So now that person is hypnotized into going, oh, yes, there is a clown's face in the cloud. I see it. And it's a product of the firing of brain cells. That's the way reality works. Any reality is possible in any circumstance because all you have to do is get certain brain cells to fire, hypnotize, brainwash people into it, and they'll make the truth out of it or what they believe is the truth. So a meaningless world does not exist, but it is experienced. There is no substance to it. There is no actuality to it. You know, there's no clown's face in the cloud. There's no clown's face in my brain. But it's something that I see because all I need to do is convert the digital information of a thought, clown's face, into a picture, and I get to see what isn't there. This is all, and the forgiveness process is all about cleaning that up. So the Creator is the source of all meaning and everything that is real in His mind. It is in my mind, too, because He created it with me. So what we're saying is the Creator is with you always and available to give you the truth about circumstance. Why should I continue to suffer the effects of my own insane thoughts when the perfection of creation is my home? Let me remember the power of my decision and recognize where I really abide. So to recognize who I am as a human being and to live in that state of love is key. And the mind can come up with a thousand excuses. Oh, you were supposed to do this and you didn't do it. Therefore, there's something wrong with you. And now you see I have a reason to be upset with you. Well, how did it feel when your power person had that kind of upset toward you? Because you're just playing out a power person dynamic. Are you willing to forgive? Are you willing to collapse that quality of disturbance and upset in you? Well, yeah, but it's really valuable because then I can kind of make you lower than me, or I can control you, or I can make you the bad guy. Well, how did it feel when your power person made you the bad guy? It's just replicating these dynamics of the generations. And then the last review for today, 15, my thoughts are images I have made. Whatever I see reflects my thoughts. It is my thoughts, but tell me where I am and what I am. If I have bought into the thoughts of, and it's so common in our culture, there's something wrong with you, you're not good enough, you'll never be good enough, you'll never make it. And I shared a few weeks ago when we were in the Michigan, we went to the thing called Art Prize, and there was a mannequin of a woman, and all over her, the art piece was all the disgusting thoughts that she'd been given about herself. And people, when they buy those thoughts, actually generate a picture of a body that they consider to be that. And to me, the most offensive of thoughts that this artist had written, and you know, all these degrading thoughts all over this mannequin, the most degrading of them all was the thought that said, I wish you would die so that I could find somebody who should make me really happy. Whew. And somebody who's the subject of that thought and isn't able to refuse it builds a picture of who they are, builds a shiny silver disc, a body made of that kind of thinking. And we wonder why people commit suicide. It's all a thinking disorder. And our minds need to be cleaned up. And it is the forgiveness process that empowers us to clean up generations and generations and generations of this degraded thinking that could have us even believe for one instant that we deserve to be treated in any way, shape, or form that resembles abuse. And yet people, oh, well, they were told you made your bed, you have to lie in it. That's now your lot in life. You have to accept it. Insane thoughts. So my thoughts turn into the world that I see. The fact that I see a world in which there is suffering and loss and death shows me that I'm seeing only the representation of my insane thoughts, and I'm not allowing my mind, real thoughts, to cast the beneficent light on what I see. So when I change my thinking, in a world that has joined millions of mind in suffering thoughts, I bring a beneficence. I bring a light to the darkness. The idea of this work of A Course in Miracles, the idea of this work of first century Aramaic forgiveness, is to be the light of the world. You listen to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he said, I am the light of the world. And then he said, now you've got a job. You are the light of the world. To bring that active presence of love to an otherwise insane and suffering world. Whether that's in the context of a conflict and a personal relationship, where somebody has to fight to be right, to be that beneficent light, to dissolve the darkness of those thoughts. That's the whole idea of the forgiveness process, is that it allows us to realize and recognize ourselves as love and to bring that love into the root of the insane world that we see and that we cooperatively create with others. If you've habituated thinking thoughts apart from the mind of love, then it seems impossible that any other world could exist. What we're saying here, yet God's way is sure. The other way is totally, completely sure. Now, when you first start with it, it is what's called the still small voice for a reason. It's a subtle frequency that, compared to the noise of rage and fear and pain and trauma and hatred and murder and death, it seems like that little still small voice doesn't have much space. But as you begin to collapse the thoughts made apart from and the world made apart from the Creator, the world between your ears, the world of perception, then the presence of love gives you a sure path to healing. The images I have made cannot prevail against the Creator, against love, because it is not my will that they do so. My will is the Creator's will, and I will place no other gods before Him. Powerful reviews. And I was going to jump into covering a piece of the next one, but that doesn't give us much time, and we haven't had a lot of conversation in the last couple of days. So what do you say we open the lines and see what anybody's got to share? Is Dr. Tim with us, Jeannie?
He is, and he's on, and nobody has a hand up. So
okay, well,
go for it, Dr. Tim.
All right, well, I'm here.
Hey, sir, welcome.
I opened up the switchboard just to be available to back up if something went wrong, and there are lots of callers, so we know there are people who can put a hand up if they've got a question. Often you ask me, so what's a pattern and practice And the pattern that's emerged this week so far is, the other day I was thinking about it, and I thought how often I was trained in therapy not to get caught in arguing with people who are drunk or high. I started out as a probation officer, so we had to deal a lot with people in the middle of an intoxication or whatever. And,
right.
And the reason is because you're not likely to get anything logical done. And even if they're just very complacent and they say, okay, whatever you want, and they're not likely to remember much of it. It's not likely to have much impact on their behavior in the future because it's got to go through the filter of whatever the substance is doing to distort their perception, et cetera. And the theme in practice this past week has been how the very same thing happens when either the hostility or fear filter comes up in me. And so the first level is for me to recognize, as Michael Rice used to talk about, if you're driving down the mountain at late at night in the Ozarks and your lights go out, you don't try to remember where the road turns, you know, 60 yards up a little bit to the right. You stop the car because your lights are out, you can't see, it's not safe to keep moving. Well, the same thing happens if hostility or fear filters get activated in me. The most important thing for me to do is stop acting, stop talking, stop doing anything until I clear the air, clear my vision, restore the filter for love or the rachma, however you want to call it. And that's, if I start to master that, then the most important thing that happens right after that, when I'm really catching myself early and I refuse to talk, to act, when my hostility or fear filters up, to do anything other than cancel my goals, breathe, integrate the energy, and refocus on my true nature as love, the very next thing is I realize, oh my goodness, if I'm talking to somebody else and they're in hostility or fear, I need to stop talking about whatever it is they want me to talk about. I need to quit focusing on the content and work on the process of their pain or their fear, which is giving rise to the anger. And I have found myself doing this more and more the more I've done this work, and I have found myself benefiting from it tremendously over the past few months. And so it's a real challenge when I haven't mastered the idea that I'm the one causing my own upset. But when I begin to get some level of mastery at that, meaning when I've really stepped into being a full-time student, you know, a perpetually avid student of how I'm causing all of my own upset, once I start doing that, then it starts to come to me when I'm in a conversation with somebody else, the early warning signs of their upset. And when I find that, I stop the conversation on the content and I focus either within myself or within the other person on the process. It is a huge boon to my relationships, and I spend a lot less time arguing with people from the hostility and fear filters and a lot more time actually clearing up the underlying pain and fear and then clearing the space for whatever might need to be discussed at a content level. So, for example, a couple weeks ago, I was at a family gathering and it was kind of quiet and we were playing a game, and I said something that triggered my brother to anger. And he just kept asking through his anger the same question over and over again. And I just got quiet. And eventually I said something like, "You seem really upset." And he kept getting more upset, and I didn't talk about it, and then eventually the conversation moved on. The next day in the morning...
You still have your head attached to him.
But the next day in the morning, he brought it up again. And rather than engaging anything about the content, I simply said, "Yeah, you seemed pretty triggered yesterday when that came up. I still don't know what that's about. And he went back and tried to talk about the content, and I didn't say anything about the content. I said, yeah, you really did seem triggered yesterday. I don't know what that was about, and you still seem upset today. And the conversation drifted away because I wouldn't engage the content because he was still upset. But I was acknowledging his upset, and I was willing to talk to him about the upset, but not the process. Because when I'm in fear, when I'm in anger, when I'm in rage, I'm not seeing clearly. I might as well be drunk. For somebody to try and convince me of something, or for me to try and convince somebody else of something from that space, it's just as ridiculous as trying to sort something out, a complex problem, when I'm drunk or high. It just doesn't work. So that's my offering. That's been quite useful for several sessions this week already.
Cool. Cool. Definitely getting people to drop the drugs, the hostility and fear, the blame game is big part of the process, isn't it? And of course, to be able to do that for ourselves.
Well, like I said, that's where it starts. I don't make any progress on that until I've become a perpetually avid student of it in myself.
Right. Yeah. Good catch. Good catch. Thank you. Great input. Any thoughts on the review lessons at all? Anything strike you in particular to focus on or amplify?
Well, I just think that every time this comes up, I remember one time Dale Allen Hoffman came into town and he talked about people he's known who are referencing great spiritual books, whether it's a Bible or Way of Mastery or Course in Miracles, and they're clinging so tightly to the idea that they're right and you're wrong, that they will literally take this spiritual tome, this volume that's supposed to be focused on love and acceptance and compassion, and beat you over the head with it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what it is that I think is my truth and how you're wrong. If I'm angry about it, it means I've clearly missed the entire message, and there's nothing for me to talk to anybody else about until I restore myself to the awareness of my true nature as that energy of creation expressing in form. And then from that focus, now I actually have the capacity to consciously extend that energy in my interactions. And until that happens, I'm not able to do that. All I'm going to be doing is living in the world of fantasy you were just talking about in the lessons. I'm going to be living in the hallucination of my perception. And so, you know, in the Einstein quote, he says, if you think you're separate or separated from anyone or anything, you're living in an optical delusion. So that's Einstein's phrase for perception. My perception is an optical delusion because my perception shows me I'm over here, you're over there. And that's not the actuality. So anyway, those are just some thoughts.
Perfect, perfect. Well, you trigger for me an experience I had about, this probably 15 years ago. And I have talked about it on the show before, but it fits so perfectly here. I was invited to go to a particular church in Springfield, Missouri, and there's a minister who's up there, and his sermon is about love, and he's talking about love. And in the front of the church where he's preaching from sit his wife and his son, who's about 3 years of age. And his son gets up and wanders over to him and wants Dad to reach down and acknowledge him and, you know, perhaps pick him up and hold him. And this guy was talking about love. It was just such a shocker, you know, working on how do I collapse hostility or fear in myself, to watch him as in front of the whole room and you know, I can only imagine, this is my projection, but I can only imagine he had no clue that this was as obvious as it was, at least to me, and I don't know if it was obvious to anyone else or not. I never discussed it with anyone else. But it's so obvious that here he's doing this whole diatribe about love, and he turns in hostility to his son and pushes him away. Get out of here. Get over, back over there with your mother. It's like, what a perfect place to stop and bend down and reach down and interrupt his diatribe about love and actually demonstrate what it looks like to embrace his three-year-old child who's now learning that, you know, the person who's there to cherish him, if they're not obeying his infantile demands, deserves, you know, hostility. It's just an interesting game to play and to be able to catch ourselves, because those things are transparent in the mind when we become aware. Oh, click. Oh, that's what that looks like. And so it's all just this, you know, this huge opportunity. I was talking with someone the other day, and there was a big laugh about how, you know, the whole game is this huge opportunity to learn forgiveness. And what an awesome opportunity it is when we become conscious of it. So great input. Thank you for that, Tim. Well, let's check with Jeannie and see if there's anything happening in the chat room, if we've got a chat room, and or anything, anybody with a hand up in the phone queue. Jeannie?
Well, we do have a chat room with a couple of guests in it, but we don't have any, you know, regular people that normally are in there talking, so I'm not sure what's going on there. We do have a hand up. So area code 417, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hey, Michael, Jeannie, it's Julie.
Hey,
hey,
young lady, welcome.
Hey, I just got off the phone. Thanks. I just got off the phone with someone, you know, when we're doing the we're on the eighth week of, you know, the Pay It Forward program, but I don't know if there's really enough time left to, you know, share an experience I had. I just realized it's pretty close to the, you know, end of the radio show. So can you tell me if I have enough time?
Well, we've got about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. We can just run the clock right down to the last second, so go for it.
Okay, so, like, Patrick and I went out to breakfast, and we were, you know, some people were there that we know, and that one person came up and greeted me and everything, and I'll make this pretty quick, but, you know, after we were just about finished, and they, you know, the other people had left and so on, and the waitress comes up, and she said to me, you know, your breakfast has been paid for. So it was this individual that had come up to greet me, and I said, wow. And then I said to Patrick, I said, well, I just have got to get a hold of her. And then Patrick said, you know, really, Julie, this is about your Pay It Forward program. You have worked with her, and you work with her and her father and her mother and her daughter, and you are receiving a Pay It Forward. And I realized, oh, that's true. She was at Harley for a couple
nice.
Of weeks. And then when I realized what was really the big aha is, what are we paying forward every day? That was so powerful.
Yeah.
when I just, you know, had this, even though she just paid for a meal, it was such a bigger reflection of what do we pay forward every day in our thought processes, how we treat others, what we're doing with our lives, you know, and I just wanted to share that with you. It was really a wonderful moment.
Cool.
I'm grateful. Yeah, I'm grateful to be doing the Pay It Forward program, and we will probably chat next week more about it, because we are on the eighth week of it, and we're going to be starting another 10-week program. So we want to get people involved, and we will chat next week about it. Okay.
Cool. Well, thank you for that sharing. That's powerful, and I certainly join you in paying forward every thought based in the active presence of love that we have available to us, and flooding our world with it so deeply that the world has no choice but to respond in kind. Oh, thank
yes.
you for that. And we are down to the last couple of seconds, so I'm just going to say, everybody, have the great, best New Year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.